banged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine, and maybe just a little bit more.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Sean Tracy. Go to mymosh.com for more information on Dr. Sean. He is specialties, shoulder, knee, hip.
Sports medicine in general.
Sports medicine in general. So we can talk a little bit about these Packers that are injured and dinged up.
Yeah.
Jared Cook, high ankle sprain. He might be done.
I keep waiting for him to come back. These high ankle sprains are, it's a big spectrum. I mean, it can go from, you know, 3-4 weeks if you just mildly get that ligament, or it can be 8 to 10 weeks. And it's, you just really don't know. And it's one of the hardest things with athletes is they come in, they ask you, well, how long do you think I'm going to be out? And it's kind of a wait and see.
You know, Ty Montgomery was out all year last year,
basically.
And then he was out last week, and the team had addressed the issue, and his diagnosis was a sickle cell trait. And I heard that he was he had some pee in his urine, and that's how this whole thing kind of started. And he's ready to play, I guess, this week. I don't know a ton about that, as I don't know a ton about a lot of the stuff that we talk about. But he's going to be back, and they say he is fine. So I don't know if he'll take, I would assume, medication, and I don't know. We haven't talked about that on this show before, but that's doing research for it. You know, they talked about that's why he was out last week. It was a game time decision, and he's likely to be back this week. A couple other guys I wanted to talk to you about. When you look at their who's out and who's questionable, Randall Cobb has a hamstring. And I think in our updates, we're talking that he is not going to play this week. I have him on a fantasy football league. Hamstrings are, again, similar to high ankle sprain. Hamstrings are just a touchy subject. Not quite sure how quick guys can come back. And it really depends on the severity of the injury.
And this is it's another thing, like a high ankle sprain, which I'm going to get back to in a second. But with a hamstring, research has shown it depends where in the hamstring you get it and how much involvement. So a lot of times with these NFL guys, they'll go ahead and get an MRI right away. They won't do that in you or me because it's not as critical. But in these guys, they get it because it has prognostic factors. The more proximal, which means up closer to your butt, that the tear is, the longer they're out, the more muscle belly. So there's actually four hamstrings. So it's not just a muscle. It's not a hamstring muscle. There's four different muscles there. And it depends on which muscles are involved that really make it, you know, what it is. You can get just one or multiple. And then how much of the muscle belly is involved, too.
When somebody talks about a strain to a tear, huge difference.
It's a spectrum, once again. You know, if you strain the muscle, it's degrees of tearing. And a lot of times what I'll do is I'll look and see if people have bleeding there. They say, oh, I tweaked my hamstring. And if I don't see bleeding there, that's a good sign. If I see, you know, blood and bruising all the way down the back of the thigh into the calf, well, that's much more significant. You can also actually tear the tendons off of the proximal or off of the pelvis, essentially, where they attach. And those are the ones that have to get repaired. When you hear, I'm just guessing with Chris Middleton with the Bucs, they say, well, I have to repair a hamstring. I don't know. I'm not, you know, affiliated with the Bucs.
Right.
But that's what I was wondering. Did he actually tear it off the bone? And then you actually have to go and put suture anchors into the bone and reattach the tendons, and that's a whole nother issue.
That's a whole nother issue. Yep. That's as severe as it gets, right?
Once again, depends. I mean, if you tear all three muscle bellies of the hamstring, basically in half, and there's a defect there, that's pretty significant too, because it's hard to sew muscle together. It's like trying to sew your hair to someone else's hair.
Oh my goodness!
So, but getting back to the high ankle sprain, just in an effort to make your listening audience the most educated there is, what a high ankle sprain really is low ankle sprain is the main ligaments down that connect the leg bones, the fibula and the tibia to the what's called the talus. A high ankle sprain is actually the ligament between those two bones. It's like it's a long thin ligament that goes up between the bones and actually rips the fibula from the tibia. So it's a different animal altogether.
When that happens, why is it such a I understand that it takes a long time for that to heal, but when a lot of times they won't come out and say it's a high ankle sprain.
Right.
But you understand, if the guy's out for the third week in a row, when you hear an ankle sprain, and most of us, any of us who've played sports, have had them.
Right.
Where you've come down on the side of somebody's foot. In fact, I've had that a number of times. You're playing basketball, come down the side of somebody's foot, or your foot just gets stuck,
right,
and your ankle kind of turns, and you get some black and blue, and it swells up a little bit, and 3 days later, you're feeling pretty good.
Once again, it's a spectrum of how much you tear it. You know, on the lateral side, for instance, on the outside where the fibula is, there's three different ligaments that you can tear. You can go all the way from stretching just one of them to tearing all through three of them. So it's really tough to just to say, you know, I hear that all the time. Well, my friend, he had an ankle sprain and he was back in 3 days and you have me in a cast and on crutches. Well, it's a completely different spectrum of things.
My first, I played indoor soccer
a
few times with when I was with the Wave.
Yeah.
We put a team together from our front office.
Yeah.
And warming up for the first game, I turned my, we were playing over on Port Washington, the old Soccer USA.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Turned my ankle pretty good.
Yeah.
And I was embarrassed, and I had high-top Reeboks on. My wife was in the crowd, and I tied it up tight. And
you were playing soccer in those?
Yeah. And we were the front office, so it gives you an idea. I know, and you're a soccer guy. And I'll embarrass myself. I don't care. Turned it pretty good and snapped it. But I tied the high-tops up and played the first half, and I actually scored a goal in the first half.
See, that's the thing. If most of these Packers were as tough as you...
No, that's stupid, actually. Because then at halftime, now we're done. I undid the shoe, and it went poof. And I went, I think I broke my foot. And I brought my wife over, and I said, I think I broke my foot. She said, well, you couldn't play on in the first half. And she looked at it, and she goes, well, I think you broke your foot. And I went to Larry Sales, who's the dude with the trainer.
Yep, he's still there.
And I said, Larry, I think I broke my foot. And he said, well, you didn't break. And I took my sock off, and he goes, wow, I think you broke your foot. And I went down to Mount Sinai, and it was a doctor that I didn't know any doctors back then. And he didn't speak great English. And I said, no cast. He goes, no cast. I said, oh, good. No cast, right? No cast. He started putting a cast on. I said, no cast, right? No cast. And he put a cast right below my knee. And I said, no cast. Huh? He goes, yeah, no cast. And there it was, so I broke my foot.
You know, usually with that kind of injury, though, we usually put a boot on unless we don't trust the patient. Then we put a cast. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, that was really a long time ago. And I'm on crutches. And, you know, then my teammates all thought I did that on purpose, so I didn't have to embarrass myself playing indoor soccer anymore.
You scored, though.
I did score. Yeah, it was a really cheap goal.
Was it on the other team's goal or yours?
No, it was our goal.
Okay.
But it was somebody took a shot and I was right in front and the goalkeeper went out and it literally dribbled right to my foot and I tapped it in.
Hey, it counts.
It did count, and I should probably come up with a better story. I was, you know, right at the top of the box and hit a laser beam and it didn't happen. Hey, a couple other players for the Packers that they're out. James Starks with a knee, still out. Randall is out with his groin injury, and J.C. Treader, their center, is still out with the knee. And then questionable, Goodson, Clay Matthews with his hamstring, Rollins with his groin. Their defensive backs are just beat up like crazy.
I'll tell you, that hamstring with Matthews, I mean, it's just, it seems like every year that thing comes up.
Every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's scar tissue probably in the muscle, and it just makes it more prone to tear. That's what's difficult about those.
And there's not, I mean, you can't prevent, right? There's no.
It's being as smart as you can, right? Doing as much rehab, you know, getting the muscle as strong as you can, warming up as good as you can. But yeah, it's difficult. There's no real surgical intervention for it, no magic pill. Yeah, that's a difficult one.
Yeah, that is. Hey, we're going to talk a lot today with our guest, Dr. Sean Tracy, about shoulder injuries. And are you the term overuse syndrome, are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's and we've talked about overuse, and that's why I love having you in, because you understand, I think, this better than most. And there was this article that I read, and one of the reasons I wanted to start the show with, there is a Wheaton volleyball player, senior standout player. She was going to be going to Clemson to play volleyball, and she had been playing volleyball since fourth grade, experienced gradual shoulder pain, which continued through her club season, eventually became unbearable. Went to see a physician who prescribed a course of physical therapy that didn't really relieve her pain. The doctor suggested she might be a candidate for labral tear surgery. She then went and got a second opinion. And second opinion was different than the first, and her condition was diagnosed, treated, and she's successfully working towards recovery. But the last paragraph, and she talked about this, she said that, you know, she wishes that competitive volleyball players like her could get more of a break from year-round training. And volleyball has now become a sport that these athletes, Dr. Tracy, they are playing basically 12 months a year.
It always amazes me with, as I see this more and more, I have many volleyball players I see, usually for shoulder injuries. It's from spiking and it's from serving. It's the overhead thing. And right, so it's like high school's just ending. I say, okay, where are you? Well, we're in sectionals. And so I say, okay, good. You know, if you guys win or lose, you got 2 weeks left, then we're good. Then I say, well, no. Then we have clubs starting. I said, when does that start? Well, that starts a week after the high school season's done. I said, at some point, we're going to have to take some time off.
We got to take a break.
Right.
With this girl, and with the second opinion, she did not have labral tear, but did need surgery to decompress her.
It was a suprascapular nerve.
Yes, that's the one, nerve. Relieve pressure in the nerve of her shoulder that was causing the muscle imbalance in the rotator cuff muscles. Familiar with that surgery for her? It seems like more of a basic.
No, this is really an advanced new
thing. Oh, it's an advanced new thing.
And it's a little bit difficult to tell. Obviously, I don't have the images. I don't have the whole
story. That's okay.
And sometimes you get differing opinions on stuff, and they might both be right to a certain degree. They might both be wrong to a certain degree.
Okay.
And just because you have shoulder surgery on something, I know this sounds crazy, doesn't mean that's exactly what was causing your pain. Because sometimes you do surgery on something you think it is. You shut the shoulder down for 3 months. You do rehab, and gee, it gets better. And you may have hit the right point. You may have not. You can also have a labral tear, which makes a cyst, which can impinge on one of the nerves too. And so a lot of times you look for that. It's called a spinal glenoid notch cyst, which is a little bit different than this, but it does affect the same nerve further down. So it's difficult to tell. When I was in fellowship about 8 years ago out in San Diego, this was the big rage, was going and decompressing the suprascapular nerve. No one had heard of it before that or done it, and that was the big rage. So sometimes when you are at a big medical center and you're a big shot guy, you want to say, "Hey, I got a new tool that I'm going to use." So I don't know, and it certainly could have been her issue. But one thing I want to stay away from is people always think, "Oh, I'm pinching a nerve in my shoulder." This nerve is actually way back more. It's in part of the scapula, so it's way back beyond kind of the muscles of the rotator cuff. So it's not in the shoulder per se. When people say I'm pinching a nerve, and I say, "Why do you think that?" Well, because it hurts. I say, well, if I take a knife and cut your finger, does it hurt? Well, yeah, I just cut nerve. I mean, that's how the body feels pain. So I want to be careful about that because I hear that a lot. People say, I'm pinching a nerve in my shoulder. And here I'm talking about a nerve being decompressed. This is a real specific thing that's way back in the scapula, almost in the chest. That's far back when you're trying to scope it.
And it doesn't surprise you that she was an outside hitter.
No, that's
in
exactly
volleyball.
What you see. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly what you see.
Because of the overuse that.
It's if you watch that, I mean, that's a lot of force that they're coming through,
goodness.
And it's again and again and again. And girls tend to be more ligamentously lax, so that puts more strain on the shoulder muscles, and it's harder to stabilize. And so you see it more often in girl volleyball players, at least I do, in females than in males.
And when you think about her age, she's 18 years old.
Yep.
And think about all, and not so much the games. You know, the games are, she's hitting the ball, let's say 20 times a game, and there's three games, but it's the practice.
It's the practice.
It's the repetition over and over.
And lack of rest. And then the other big thing is kids don't do the proper rehab. They you know, I have three kids of my own. I talk about this all the time. And they just don't get it. I tell volleyball players and people like that stories. I say, when I was with the Padres, for instance, in the locker room, you know, we're in the dugout. They have big locker rooms before that. Trevor Hoffman, who ended up being a reliever for the Brewers, right? He was a reliever for the Padres forever. I think all-time save leader.
Great guy.
He was really a genuinely good guy. He would start doing his warm-ups about the fourth or fifth inning in the locker room with these little weights, and he'd go through this whole routine every single game. And I talked to him about it, and he said, it's just pure maintenance. How do you think I've been doing this for this long? And kids don't realize that. I mean, he would put an hour to an hour and a half in of warm-up and maintenance before he'd go pitch, whether or not he'd pitch or not. That's what people don't do.
There's a guy in this area. His name is John Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
And went to Messmer High School. Big-time baseball player.
Johnny Arnold.
But his dad.
Yeah, I know. Him and I coached together last year at Sussex Hamilton.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So John's a Messmer guy, and my brother plays in baseball tournaments all over the country. He plays 60 and over.
Yep.
And John is just a guy that is at the top of his game.
Yeah.
And he gets invited to play on different teams throughout the country, tournaments, and he's a pitcher.
Yes.
And I had him on a baseball show a year ago, and I said, what's the key? Like, how you're at this age, how can you still throw? And he said, you know, when I get done with a game, I go home and lift. That's when he goes home and lifts weights.
Yeah.
And he said, it's worked for me. I don't know if it worked for anybody else, but here's what I've done. And, you know, it's really impressive.
I'll tell you, I think he was in Major League Baseball, you know, back when he was playing. And that's where he picked that up from. Jake Peavy, another pitcher. I remember he would come off and he'd take 1 pound weights and he'd be in the weight room. They have weight rooms in the down the dugout. He had 1 pound weights and he would sit in after he pitched, do the rotator cuff exercises. And so I thought that was very interesting too. But these guys, it's all about maintenance, because when you get to that level, there's a lot of good pitchers. It's who can maintain their shoulder strength. And the kids and the young people don't understand that. Of course, when you're a kid, you're indestructible, right? So you just go do the things, maybe ice a little bit or something. But these older athletes and these guys that make it big time, the amount of preventative maintenance they do is unbelievable.
We're going to talk about that. And we're also going to talk, a lot about shoulders. And thank you for sending me the speech that you gave not too long ago. You sent me the slides on that, and I know more now about shoulders than I've ever known in my life, and we'll continue. I've got a couple questions with this term overuse syndrome, and I've got a few questions for you on that. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Band called Script. You know where they're from?
Ireland.
They're from Ireland. It's a couple Irish boys right there. All Star is the name. Brought to you by Dr. Sean Tracy. Go to mymosh.com for more information on Dr. Sean Tracy. How much do you see, and you know, we're talking about this overuse syndrome is the term I'm using because I saw it online today and I want to sound smart. but it's, how much do you see the problems that we're going to talk about with shoulders due to overuse?
That's what most of them are, and it depends really on what age you're talking about. Obviously, if you're talking about kids, it's there's something called Little League shoulder where you can get overuse, and it's from throwing or pitching, and it's the growth plate. If it's an adult, a lot of times you get overuse. It's somebody at their job, and they're constantly reaching above and pulling things down, and you get something called rotator cuff impingement. So overuse is a very generic term to describe basically you're doing too much for your shoulder at your age.
In that article that we read, the line where she says, look, I've been playing volleyball since the fourth grade and have experienced gradual shoulder pain, which continued through her club season. The part that jumps out at me is, and she's in fourth grade.
Right.
And it's gradual shoulder pain.
Right.
As a parent, you want to know about that early and get it looked at early and not wait until it gets to the point that she had to go have surgery, right?
Yeah, no question. And most of the kids, what happens with this is, especially, like I said, in female athletes, they're ligamentously lax. What that means is the ligaments that help stabilize the shoulder, they don't stabilize it as well as in males, for instance. And so the rotator cuff, the muscles, really have to compensate and make up for that. Well, if you're continuously having pain, that's the body's way of telling you, hey, you're doing something wrong, right? I mean, it's an alarm bell. And what happens is you're slowly rubbing the rotator cuff up against, there's a couple different areas, but basically you're rubbing it and you're causing attritional damage. It's kind of like a rope that gets frayed over time. And then at some point it's going to snap and break and then you're in real big trouble. So it's better to catch it early on because it can heal.
So if somebody catches it early on, comes to see you, there's a way, and they may have to shut down for a little while and give it some rest, right?
Well, that's what I tell people, overuse means you're using it too much, and there's a lot of these injuries that I say you can't gut through this. This isn't a no gain or no pain no gain type of thing. your body's telling you you're overdoing it. You got to shut down. And then we have to find out why this is happening. Because I tell people this too. If you shut down and then go back and start doing the exact same thing, why do you think something different is going to happen? And so you have to, that's why I get people into physical therapy. And they look at them mechanically and say, what are we doing? What do we need to strengthen? And a lot of it has to do with core strength. And you know, like I said before, the kids, they don't think about all this maintenance type of stuff. You know, I'm a kid. Nothing ever hurts or bothers me. Well, if you want to be a high-level athlete and expect to be able to push your body to these levels, you got to do the maintenance.
See, and you wear three hats, man. You're a doctor, you're a parent, and you're a coach.
Yeah, doctor's the easiest part.
That's the easiest part. Have you had that conversation to your children, to your student athletes, your kids, and actually your kids, not the kids on your team,
right,
your own kids, to say, hey, look, understand that there are things that we needed to know. If your shoulder is hurting or your ankle is hurting and you're trying to hide that from me, that's not good.
Right. It was interesting. I was coming home from a game with my son, and he was a good pitcher, and he had a game where he was a little bit off. And I was talking to him about it, and I said, you know, your velocity looked a little down and things like that. He's like, well, my shoulder's hurting. I said, whoa. Wait a minute. I said, this is important. Like, are you saying that just because you pitched bad and you're trying to make an excuse, or is your shoulder really hurting? Because I will tell you this. If your shoulder's hurting, you're going to be done for a while. Like,
yeah,
you're not going to pitch for a couple weeks. And he's like, I pitch bad. And I was like, okay,
good.
Let's just be honest.
Yeah. And I think that's really important to have that conversation.
Yeah, especially at these young ages. I mean, kids really should not be having pain after games. One of the problems is my daughter, who's 10, is, you know, she's going through growth spurts and you get these overuse things in your heel or in your knee. And I was trying to talk to her about warming up and stretching beforehand. She says, well, none of the other girls do. And that's another problem.
Sure.
You feel like you're a weirdo because you're out there stretching. And I know if my kids are saying this, I'm sure lots of kids are saying it. So I feel good in the office. I say, yeah, you got to warm up. You got to stretch. And the kid's like, yeah, whatever. You know, but.
And after. I mean, that's what I've found out. And it's something that people talk a lot about now. Is if you're going to go work out, especially somebody my age, stretch before, but then stretch after as well.
I love the after stretching and the after icing. I tell this story to kids too. I said, when we were with the Padres, we would take a bag of ice and tie it onto the, you know, Jake Peavy or Trevor Hoffman, tie it onto their shoulder and elbow and stick a 15-minute timer on them and say, this does not come off till the alarm goes off.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, the Wave guys have ice baths. I mean, actual big tubs that we fill up with ice and water and they jump in there. And I think it's a great thing. And whether you're having pain or not, I used to ice after every time I pitched, I'd stick my elbow in a bucket of ice and water for 15 minutes.
What does the ice bath, like, what does that physically do to the body?
With soccer players, it's usually their ankle, their knee, so it's easier to do that. But it shuts down, you know, any inflammatory process that's going on that can cause some destruction. It's kind of like after you sprain your ankle, right? It swells up. You want to get the swelling down so you can start rehabbing it earlier. As far as maintenance, it gets rid of all the little inflammation that's happening and lets your body heal that up quicker.
Boy, that's
I love the ice. And I'll tell you, the 15-minute of ice and water, it is hard in the beginning, but after you do it three or four times, it becomes just routine. And it doesn't even feel cold anymore.
And that's basically
preventative.
Totally.
Yep. My parents would bring a cooler of ice and water to each game, and after I pitched every game, that's what Major League Baseball players do.
Yes.
Every game, they're ice, and then you see them. If you see them in the dugout, they all have a jacket on in between innings too. They're keeping their arm warm, you know, while they're still going to go out and pitch. And then once you're done, you ice it down. There's so much maintenance that people don't realize.
You know, and parents, we talked about parents just a second ago. Sometimes parents can be idiots, and I put myself in that category. And I'll tell you a quick story. My son Matthew was playing basketball at Maranatha Baptist Bible College, and he was dating a girl who's now his wife, Kiara, and she would come and sit by us. And I realized at this point that this was getting serious. He was limping in warm-ups. And I go, what's he limping for? Game hasn't even started yet. And her head snapped because she was sitting in front of me. She was, do you know he turned his ankle last game? And I said, no. She was, no, he did. And it's still bothering him. And I went, okay, all right, thanks for letting me know. You know, that little ankle, that's a long way from the heart. She didn't think that was funny at all.
I get it.
Yeah, you get it. Yeah. You laugh at that.
It's tough to know. I, you know, Just something happened recently with the quarterback from the Jets. You know, here he hurt his knee, and I think Joe Namath called him out and said, oh, you know, we, in my day, we would go back and play, and, you know, why is he standing on the sideline? Well, right. He tore his ACL.
Right.
I mean, so.
Joe, even you wouldn't have gone back with that. Guys, let's get to a break. Other side of the break, we'll continue our conversation. I've got a number of questions regarding shoulders. And the first one that you can think about, why does my shoulder pop, crack, and or click? He can't really tell me what the sound is, but he said it's either popping, cracking, or clicking. And we'll find out why that happens with Dr. Sean Tracy. Go to mymosh.com for more information on him. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. That is Pink, Just Like Fire, brought to you by Dr. Sean Tracy. He's a sports medicine specialist at Mosh. Go to mymosh.com for more information. We're talking about bad shoulders. And in walks Coach Tom Squiddle. And he said, man, I got horrible shoulders. I got to talk to this guy. Coach, how are you?
I'm fine.
Man, we did 10 o'clock. We're doing a playoff show, man. We got a great show coming up from 10 to noon. Shoulders that both shoulders are bothering you?
Both shoulders bother me. I don't know if it's just at that age or what it is.
Well, in the back, like top, where
kind of on the sides. Like I don't have quite the mobility I used to have. I know it's just overuse. A lot of years of football. A lot of years of throwing a baseball. I don't know.
I can diagnose this one.
What do you think?
Arthritis.
Nope.
No. Darn it.
It's gonna be rotator cuffs.
Is it?
Yeah, it's rotator cuff impingement. How old are you, Tom?
I am 59.
59, yeah. It's most likely attritional tears of his rotator cuff. He'll either have a full thickness or a partial thickness tear that's irritating him.
And what does he do for that? Just live with it? Put ibuprofen? What?
Typically at the point where he's at, where he's saying he's having pain, I like to do a corticosteroid shot. It's an anti-inflammatory. It's like putting a bunch of Advil in the shoulder and then get him into physical therapy. I give him about a month of that, 6 weeks of that. If it's not getting better, you get an MRI and look. Because if it is a full thickness tear, a lot of times that needs surgery to repair it.
My wife has been after me for years. You got to go. So I talked to my general doctor, and he said it's probably just arthritis or something.
Wow, that was my guess. Nah, I wasn't that far off. No.
That's like the old standby to say, well, it's just arthritis. Just like in kids, everything's growing pains, right? Well, no, and it's probably not. I mean, shoulder arthritis is, I would say, you see rotator cuff issues 10-1 or 20-1 to rotator cuff. Arthritis.
I know that I heard it benching both shoulders at one point, bench press, and I used to power lift and, you know, lift heavy weights. And
yeah, that's pretty classic rotator cuff. I actually have a patient right now who is supposed to be in the world championships for bench pressing. He's from Chicago, and he tore his rotator cuff, and I had fixed him, and now he was a week away. And his bench press was like 700 or something. And he said he was just warming up with 550, and he tore his pec.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, hey, but my rotator cuff held. Yeah, it's
not my rotator cuff when I'm lifting 550.
That wasn't you, right?
No.
Oh my God. Obviously not. For somebody like Tom, if that doesn't, so you do the shot, you get him into therapy. If that doesn't take the pain away,
right?
The MRI, what is a rotator cuff surgery like nowadays?
So, you know, most of us do it now arthroscopically, which means through little poke holes. We go inside. It's on a high-def flat-screen TV. I always say there's very little bleeding. Yeah, you got a nice picture there.
Yes, I do.
And it's an outpatient surgery. It usually takes about 30 to 45 minutes. The repair itself typically it's not that hard to do. You put these little, we call them anchors, but these little screws that go into the bone. There's suture that comes out. Use the suture to tie the rotator cuff back down. I tell people, like, look at the cuff of your shirt. It's like taking that cuff that's pulled back and you put it back in place and tie it down. The big thing is the rehab. You got to give it time to heal up. It's usually about 6 weeks in a sling. You can use your elbow, use your wrist, do, you know, typing, texting, eat, things like that, but you can't do heavier stuff. And it's about 4 to 6 months of recovery. It depends, once again, your age, do you smoke or not, how bad was the cuff tear.
And you would look to do one and then wait a while and do the other.
For sure, because you want to do them far enough apart, because what happens is when you do one, you overuse the other, and then that one hurts. And if, let's say you do the right one first. If you do the left one at 3 months and the right one's not healed up, then you're going to compromise your repair.
Hey, when we're leaving the second break, I talked about the question that I'd gotten here. Why does my shoulder joint pop, crack, and or click? And what could be causing that? And the guy here, he said, look, I can't tell you what the sound is. It's either a pop or a crack or a click or something like that. And so I said, well, let me ask and find out.
It's interesting, too, because when I see patients like that, I say, you know what, let me put my hand on it, feel it, and let me hear it, because depending on what the sound is like, it's different things. There's a certain type of grinding, and I know that's arthritis. There's a certain type of popping. That's arthritis of the glenohumeral joint, the main shoulder joint. There's a certain type of popping, and that's the AC joint. There's a certain type of clunk you get, that's a labral tear. Some of it can be the bicep snapping, some can be the rotator cuff snapping underneath the acromion. And a lot of times it's nothing. I tell people, I said, do you ever get up in the morning and take those first couple steps and your knees or your back or your ankle pop and click?
All
and
of
then
them.
It kind of goes, right, yeah, exactly. And a lot of times it's nothing. My first question is, does it hurt when it does it? If they say, well, no, just might not be a big deal. You know, we don't chase pops or clicks, but depending on what the exact sound is, what it feels like, actually, when I have my hand on the shoulder, I can usually diagnose it.
Hey, another question that was actually emailed to us when the promo hit that you were going to be out here on the show today. And he says, I'm going to have surgery on my shoulder. The doctor has offered me the choice between two different types of anesthesia, general and...
What he means, everyone goes to bed during shoulder surgery because we're doing it. It's right up by your head and neck. What they do is the regional means a block, and a block means you put a needle in and you numb the nerves up that are going to the arm. I recommend most people get that. The reason why is it allows when I do the surgery, we use fluid in your shoulder, and it's under a certain type of pressure to keep the bleeding down so we can see. Obviously, when you're doing it on a big screen, if it's bleeding, you can't see. If you have a block, your body, even though you're sleeping, you won't feel the pain. If you're sleeping and you don't have the block, your blood pressure will go up because your body still responds to pain. And then that means I got to put higher pump pressure in the shoulder. I know this is pretty technical, but basically it makes the surgery a lot easier for the surgeon. And I inflate your shoulder less, so you do better afterwards if you do the block. So now anesthesiologists, they use ultrasound. They can really see where they're going. And I do blocks on all my patients, which is the regional anesthesia.
That's called the regional.
Yes.
Last question before we get to a break. If you dislocate your shoulder, how long do you need to stay out of work? This woman is an office worker, so she's on her computer a lot.
Yeah.
And she also asked, and I think this is an easy question, can I make it worse if I remove the sling too early?
So one point I really want to make here, and this is something I hear all the time, there's a difference between a dislocation and a separation, and it drives me nuts when people screw these up, especially when I'm listening to sports radio or you know. And a separated shoulder is your AC joint, your acromioclavicular joint. When that pops up, you fall on your shoulder. That happens in athletes. That's a separated shoulder. A dislocated shoulder is actually the ball and socket, when the ball pops off of the humeral head, pops off of the glenoid. In general, you only need a sling for about 3 to 5 days on that. And we actually want to get you moving early, because if you keep it tied up to your side too long, you get a frozen shoulder.
You know, that part of what you do for a living has completely changed. I mean, you get them up moving really quick right now after a lot of different surgeries.
Yep.
Look, and aging myself, Tom, you'll understand this more than Dr. Tracy will, but I had surgery when I was a junior in high school on what's called a joint mouse, just a piece of cartilage floating around. I was in the hospital like 2 days.
Wow.
And was on crutches, and it was, now it's 15 minutes, and it's, in fact, Dr. Hickey was his name. He said, look, we're going to cut here and hope it's there. If it's not there, we're going to cut on the inside.
Yeah.
If it's not there, we'll cut on top, and then we know it's going to be there. But when they cut it on one side, it was right there, and they took it out. But they had no idea going to surgery exactly where it was, because it floated all over.
Right. Yeah, the tools that we get from the companies that the research and development is amazing, and it's making things more minimally invasive, shorter stays. But I'll tell you, the research just keeps pushing the envelope as far as how quickly we can get people weight bearing and moving. I just keep reading more things about Achilles tendons and ankles fractures as far as, oh, it's actually okay to weight bear them right away and things like that. And it's a little scary, but yeah, it just keeps moving quicker.
Man, you know, maybe what we do, hey, this would be great. We'll do a remote. We'll do a live show when you do the surgery on Swiddle's shoulder.
Yeah, that would be neat.
Yeah, let's do it.
You know what? There I'll be, hey, this is the Midwest, and I'll faint, and then we'll be dead air forever.
It'll be like that Seinfeld episode where Kramer shoots that piece of candy in that guy in the operating table.
Yeah, it was a thin man or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Or wait, no,
something.
Junior. Is it Junior?
Yeah, that's awesome. Guys, let's get to a break. Special guest, Dr. Sean Tracy. Go to mymosh.com. Coach Tom Swiddle, I grabbed him out of the hallway, so get in here, those rotten shoulders you have. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan. Sean Tracy standing up for the Notre Dame fight song. Notre Dame grad. I don't think we're talking college football with you today, huh?
No, big game against Navy. They're starting in about 30 minutes. It's going to have big BCS, or not BCS, yeah. But big playoff implications.
Yeah. Well, man, they're struggling. They've had a rough year, boy.
I think Kimberly could take them, actually.
Kimberly was down at half.
Fond du Lac.
Yeah, Fond du Lac.
Fond du Lac. We're talking to Dr. Sean Tracy about shoulder injuries in the world of sport. We just got emailed a question, and this one makes me laugh. I had rotator cuff surgery about a year ago. The doctor used 4 metal anchors to hold the torn tendon in place. I'm planning to fly overseas next month. Will the metal anchors set off the security system?
You know, I get asked that a lot, and it depends on how sensitive the metal detectors are. Most likely not. I mean, think about it. If you have like a button, a snap on your jeans or something, it doesn't set it off. And those anchors are about 5 millimeters, so it shouldn't. But
boy, you get asked that a lot. I thought that when I read that, I started laughing.
Now all the time, especially with joint replacements.
Really?
And those do set it off.
When you talk about those metal anchors, is that the terminology that you guys use?
Yeah, although I don't use metal. That's once again we talk about the technology that's changed. I use biocomposite now, and they are basically, they absorb and they're made of bone, and so they just, you can't even see them on an x-ray. They just grow right back in.
Really?
Yeah, and it's really cool. And they're fluted, which means they let the sort of growth factors and stuff come out of the bone now too to help it heal. And there's so much technology with that. But yeah, that's a little old-fashioned to put a metal anchor in now.
Interesting. Maybe he had the same doctor who did my knee did his.
Here's your doctor is Dr. Vinny Boombox.
Yeah, there you go. One more question. I have a partial rotator cuff tear. Mm-hmm. Doctors ordering a type of surgery called ASD to decompress the tendons in the shoulder area. Will this take away the pain in my shoulder, and can I expect the results to last?
It might, and not to get too technical here, but it depends on if it's on the inside of the cuff or on the outside of the cuff. People who get partial thickness tears on the outside of the cuff, the thought is that it's impinging on what's called the acromion. And if you take off 5 to 6 millimeters of bone from the acromion, it gives you more room, sort of like raising the ceiling in a room. It makes it easier for the rotator cuff to slide by that. But once again, it depends on where the partial thickness tear is, how much. If it's a 75% partial thickness tear, you really should repair that then too.
Hey, during the break, you guys were in the hall, and I'll send Tom an invoice for this checkup that he just got. Coach Tom Swiddle in studio. Were you able to, with just the few things that you did with Tom for his shoulders, were you able to say, hey, look, you might want to get this looked at? Or
yeah, for sure. You can, once again, when you see 30, 40 shoulders a week, and over the years, you know, it comes to 20,000. You can just tell by how people move it. You can tell by their story, what they have. You know, from, you know, him telling me, hey, it hurts when I do this, this, and this. I already know what the diagnosis is, and then I throw them through a couple of motions, and you know, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So now look at, man,
so worth it for me to come in a little early today. Seriously.
You know, last week we had a sports psychologist in. You should have came in early.
I'm glad I was up at Michigan
Dr.
Tech watching
Jenny
my son.
Dr. Jenny Heineman said she'd love to meet you, boy. No doubt. Hey, another question. This guy who wrote the question, but told that I'm going to require shoulder stabilization, that I will not gain full range of movement to my shoulder afterwards. The news has concerned me because I'm a dance teacher and need full mobility. Maybe this is a girl named Sam. So is that the case? Anyway, the news has concerned me as I'm a dance teacher and need full mobility. Is that the case?
once again, this is a spectrum. It depends how unstable she is. It depends, does she have bony loss? There's a lot of factors. But in general, no. I tell people they're going to lose about 5 to 10 degrees of external rotation, which is something you don't really notice. She'd still be able to get her arm up over her head and do all the things she wants to do. So it's definitely better to get it stabilized, because the more times you have instability episodes, you chew up your cartilage in there, and eventually you're going to have pain and problems.
How many shoulder do you see on a weekly basis, do you think, to a patient?
I would say between 30 to 50.
Really?
Yeah. It's unbelievable how common shoulder pain is in Milwaukee. Period. And it's because it's such a mobile joint, and we're such an active population. And as the baby boomers stay active later, they don't want to just settle down.
Tom, do you know, so how long has this bothered you, your shoulders?
Long time.
Really?
Yeah.
And have you thought about getting it looked at?
Yeah, I've just never done it.
Just live through the pain. When does it hurt the most?
You know, I was telling Dr. Tracy today that, you know, when I sleep at night, I have to sleep in the weirdest positions in order to be comfortable. You know, I just can't, I prop pillows under my shoulders, and it's just, it's weird.
Dr. Tracy, does it surprise you that it's both shoulders?
No, not at all. Especially with describing what he was doing. Yeah, and a lot of times I'll see people for one shoulder, and then 2 years later I'll see them for the other. It's interesting what Tom was saying, though. The number one reason that I see people for shoulder pain is it's affecting their sleep. And that's when people really come in. The number two reason is because their wife made them. So.
I'm 0 for 2 because my wife's been after me for years.
You know what? Now you can tell her, man. And again, if you'd have been here last week, we'd have gotten it all figured out. The mind, the shoulders, you'd have been
set a new man
for a while. Somebody Tom's age, Dr. Tracy, if he does take the next step and want to go through and get this fixed, is it something that lasts then for him as far as the pain will then subside?
Typically, yeah. I mean, especially if it's a rotator cuff tear, you get that fixed and people do, you know, quite a bit better. Especially, I always ask them, are you sleeping? Oh, yeah. And it's a very successful surgery.
There you go.
I've got his card, Dr. Tracy. You know, appreciate that.
And if you have any questions, go to mymosh.com and get the information on Dr. Sean Tracy. He is one of the good ones. If you don't trust me, Rob Stoltz sent me a text that said he's a great orthopedic and a better man. So, Dr. Tracy, it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah, you bet. Good luck to Notre Dame today.
Well, they'll need it.
Yeah, they will. They will need it. Thanks for listening. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.